From APM, this is the Dinner Party Download, your audio culture atlas. Subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Time for cocktails.
Yes. Usually in the show, Brendan and Rico tell you something that happened this week in history and then pair it with a fitting boozy beverage.
That's right.
This week, we're doing something different.
Indeed. As regular listeners know, this month on our website, we have been running a bracket we are cheekily calling Martini Madness, in which we've pitted classic cocktails against each other and urged you to vote for your favorites. Well, we are now down to the final two.
Exciting. On one hand, you have the mighty whiskey-based tipple known as the Manhattan.
That's the good part.
And it is up against, unbelievably,
yep,
the gin and tonic.
Nightmare.
What?
Total nightmare.
It staged a stunning upset over the martini.
It's a sacrilege, what you just said.
No, you asked people to vote, and the people have spoken, dude.
The people
That's
are,
the way it works.
The people are wrong, is how it
Okay,
is
nice
saying.
To meet you, Mr. Authoritarian Dictator.
Thank you.
But listen, over at dinnerpartydownload.org, you can cast your votes right now for the final battle of the boozes.
Yes.
And we want you to be informed voters.
We need that for you. So we each went out and enlisted an expert to champion one of these drinks and explain why it should be crowned king of cocktails. In a second, you'll hear me speak to the cocktail queen, Carrie Ha, and she will defend the Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. But first, here's my conversation with Nicole Hassoun. She is the head distiller at Joseph A. Magnus Distillery in Washington, D.C. She also created a line of craft tonics called Chronic Tonic.
Uh-huh.
So she seemed like maybe she'd be the perfect person to defend the gin and tonic.
Best.
She's all in.
Yeah, even though it should have been the martini.
That's enough from you. When we met at the distillery, Nicole gave me a brief history of the drink.
So tonic was a medicine, and gin was the chaser for that medicine. That's really how it all started. When the British Army was in India and Southeast Asia, they ran into malaria and had problems with it, and the anti-malarial drug, which is still one of the best anti-malarial drugs that we have, was the bark from the cinchona plant. That was ground up, and it's really bitter, and it's really woody, and it tastes, I mean, I like it, but it tastes funky. And so
that's the quinine.
That's the quinine. That is exactly what that is, and that's what makes tonic water tonic water. It's anti-malarial, it is a muscle relaxer, it is a pretty wonderful little drug in small doses. I mean,
it's a muscle relaxer. I'm on it right now. Don't worry about it. Nicole's sliding out of her seat. It's like, what's she on? Quinine? Okay, cool.
But, in order to make it taste better, they took that bark, ground it up, mixed it with sugar and lime and lots of gin, and they drank it. And the British Army liked it so much, they took it home, and it became just like the national drink.
A lot of people have a terrible first experience with gin. And I am guessing, you know, people know of a gin and tonic. So maybe they're like, when they first start drinking, they go to a bartender like, I'll have a gin and tonic. And they sound fancy. And they get some garbage well version. And it totally puts them off. So I want to know what separates a great gin and tonic from just a basic drink.
It comes down to quality of everything involved. I mean, I know that you've maybe once or twice had a gin that probably comes out of a plastic bottle on the floor of a bar.
No, me never. I'm so classy.
Yeah,
get
sorry,
out of town.
Never mind. I mean, some of us have. And it's not a high quality produced spirit. And the same idea goes for tonic. The tonic water that comes out of the gun often is this sugary, sweet, aggressive, fake bittering agent mixer. When you get that as your first experience of a gin and tonic, it can ruin it for a really, really long time. And if you take the time and to make something beautiful, then it's gonna be fantastic.
I'm going to assume, for the sake of argument,
yes,
that a gin and tonic is your most favorite beverage. Why is it better than, say, I don't know, a Manhattan?
Well, it crushes the Manhattan.
Ooh. Ooh.
One, because of ease of creation. It is two ingredients and a lime on ice. You don't even mix it. It also, obviously, is anti-malarial, as we discussed. It is a muscle relaxer, as we discussed, and it has the calming effects of that beautiful ethanol that's in that gin. It has more flavor than a Manhattan. I mean, I know sweet vermouth is amazing. Trust me, I drink it on the rocks. It's wonderful. But gin is like a spice blend, specifically gin and tonic, because it's hitting kind of geographically on the tongue all the points that you want to hit. You get the bitter from the quinine, you get the citrus, you get the sweetness from the tonic water itself, and you get these all these other kind of umami flavors from the gin. It's a pretty perfect cocktail, to say the least.
There you go, Nicole Hassoun of Joseph A. Magnus Distillery in Washington, D.C.
And I'm not convinced.
Oh, come on. How can you resist the beauty of gin, man? It's all juniper.
I'm all about gin, but a two-ingredient delivery system for medication? That is the king of cocktails?
Oh, come on.
Listen, I spoke to Carrie Ha about a real contender, the Manhattan. Carrie has been voted one of the best mixologists in Los Angeles, and I met with her on the patio of Alcove Big Bar, where she is bar manager.
Well, I certainly think it's ironic that I'm in L.A. defending the reputation of a Manhattan.
On the other hand, everybody from Manhattan seems to be moving here lately, so maybe it's apropos.
I mean, it's the weather. You can't beat this. What else would you want to drink on a beautiful, like, you know, 70-degree weather on a patio than a beautiful Manhattan?
That's true. That makes some sense. So first of all, tell us, for those who don't know, what's in the classic Manhattan?
Very typically rye whiskey, some sort of French sweet vermouth, and Angostura bitters.
And where does it come from? What's the history behind this drink?
So the origin of the Manhattan is a little bit murky. There are two very popular versions of the story. The first being that it was invented at the New York Manhattan Club by a gentleman who was attending a party that Winston Churchill's mother was holding for one of the presidential candidates.
Uh-huh.
We don't actually think that that's true, though, because actually at that time she was said to be pregnant in London, so nowhere near New York. And not drinking if she was pregnant, hopefully.
Yes. Maybe this was a story invented by someone who was drunk on a Manhattan at the time.
Perhaps. But regardless, it's a really delicious cocktail that we're really glad came about.
Why do you think it's as popular as it is?
It's kind of one of those things that I consider almost a gateway into the whiskey world. The sweet vermouth kind of like rounds out those presumably harsh edges of what whiskey is, and it gives it a softness, and it's a little bit sweet. You know, it has a beautiful cherry in it.
Yeah, it's a little bit like dessert.
It's very easy to drink.
Is there a kind of person that orders a Manhattan? Who's the Manhattan type?
I hate to be gender specific, but I get a lot of women ordering Manhattans. I mean, a Manhattan is kind of, you know, up in a coupe. So I know a lot of
coupe glass, it's kind of a rounded martini glass.
Sometimes a lot of gentlemen ask me for Manhattan served in a rocks glass because they don't want to carry that, what they call the girly little martini glass.
What is your least favorite way? People often will order a drink and they want it changed somewhat. What is your least favorite way to serve a Manhattan?
Probably if anybody asked for it shaken. I just don't really quite understand that.
Because it waters it down too much?
Way too much. And it kind of gives fluffiness to the drink and froth to the drink that I don't believe like a really sexy, nice Manhattan should have. A really beautiful Manhattan should have clarity, no ice chips in it. Like it's, to me, a very kind of like sexy drink in that way.
Yeah, it's kind of silky as a drink.
Very much so.
All right. We have to talk a little bit about the Manhattan's competitor, the gin and tonic. Is there any world where you could see a gin and tonic beating the Manhattan?
I mean, you know what? I'm not going to hate on a gin and tonic. It's such...
What?
I'm not going to hate on it. It's a very refreshing drink when it's like the dead heat of summer and you just want something cool and you can slam it down. But
it's most associated with a country that we defeated in order to attain our independence.
I just don't...
It beat a martini.
I really can't get on board with that. For me, a martini is like one of the most quintessential cocktails of all time. You know, like sometimes chefs say to test the chef, they'll ask them to cook an omelet or an egg. For me, if you can make a beautifully diluted and well-chilled martini, then, you know your stuff.
So what do you think that this says about the voting public?
I don't know, but it makes me sad, and the Manhattan must certainly win.
Carrie Ha, bar manager of Alcove Big Bar in L.A., defending the Manhattan, which will clearly destroy the gin and tonic and emerge victorious in our martini madness bracket.
Whereas I contend the gin and tonic will lay waste to the Manhattan, just as it did to your beloved martini.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about this, actually, because it's my understanding earlier this week you waged a last-minute anti-martini campaign, yes, that pushed gin and tonic over the top in that matchup. Is that correct?
So what if I did? So what if I did? It's a free country.
We invited you to guest host our show, and your first move was to sow chaos?
Okay.
In our bracket?
Okay, what I did is I created some much-needed drama in your bracket, which is what I did. So you're welcome.
People, just do the right thing. Vote at dinnerpartydownload.org.